All right, here we go.
You all set?
Wait, who are you asking?
You.
Me, yes.
Yeah, sorry, I failed to make eye contact. I looked at you when I asked you the question, but I looked
down. But I wasn't looking you at you, so. Yeah,
you all set?
All right, here we go.
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we simplify the good life. My name is Brock Dennis.
And I'm Aaron Flores, broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
For the last time in 2 weeks, we're going to miss you.
I mean, I'm only going to miss one episode, right?
Two,
right?
I think.
What?
I think.
You scheduled two? Oh, no.
2 Mondays?
I am staying that long. Yeah. Never mind.
Yes. It's cool. We'll talk about that, I guess, right? Sure. We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, simpler living, and today, road trip.
Road trip, because you're driving all the way to Mexico?
Yep. No, I'm not.
Also, because we have Emily from the Hub Bicycle Company in Cambridge, Massachusetts, who happens to be on the West Coast. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Pretty awesome.
Good. Yeah.
Can you say park your car in Harvard Yard?
Nope.
No. She refuses.
No, I will not.
Does that get old? Like,
no. Yes. Yeah. Nah, yeah.
How often does that come up?
It's fine. When you are in the Boston area, not that often.
Yeah.
When you leave, often.
Anytime. Okay. Anytime you mention Boston, people are like, Clam chowder. Say it.
Yeah.
Say it.
I had to do laundry on my road trip recently, and I went to a laundromat, and then next door there happened to be like an Irish pub, Irish styled pub, and so I went in there because it was next door, and so
that's an important distinction between an actual Irish pub and an Irish styled pub.
So I was sitting there drinking a beer, waiting for my laundry to dry, and the Dropkick Murphys came on, and I was "You motherfucker." Like, I can't escape it. It's like the worst terrible Boston-y, like crappy Irish.
It's a trope, thing. Right? Are they Bostonian?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I don't know.
Sadly.
Yeah.
No, they do a thing like every St. Patty's Day.
Yeah.
Like,
okay.
They're in Boston.
I see.
So that's like, oh, you're from Boston? Cool. Dropkick Murphys.
Right.
Park your car in Harvard Yard or whatever.
It's and you're like, fuck you all.
No, none of those things.
But you're not originally from Boston.
I'm a native New Englander, but not originally from Boston. No.
Well, and it's nice to know there are so many nuances between stereotypes and what's actually there. So,
true.
Yeah. But all that to say, you're on a road trip right now.
I am.
It's a multimodal road trip.
It is.
And it brings you to Portland. So, our mutual acquaintance, Josh Disson, who I think he discovered us and we discovered him back in 2011, I think. And he was connected with you on a project. And so I saw him when I was in Boston a couple weeks ago. And we met you. And anybody who faithfully and religiously listens to the show, as you should, was probably privy to our conversation that we had last December. So, Hub Bicycle Company in Cambridge, Massachusetts. What do people need to know about that place?
It's great. It's my favorite spot in the world, probably.
That's good.
Hub Bicycle Company is it has been for the past 5 years a service only bicycle shop in beautiful Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Service only being you can't buy a bike there.
Right. That you couldn't buy a bike off the rack. You couldn't roll out of the shop with a bike.
You could do a semi-custom or custom.
Yeah, totally. Yep. We just started right before going on this little sabbatical, bringing in a few commuter bikes from Scott. We're pretty excited about that.
Nice.
I feel like it's not that selling bikes is a service that we haven't been able to offer.
Uh-huh.
And, 5 years in of working on like hammered, terrible bikes for people who ride them every day. I mean, we have people that ride through the winter year round, gave us a really good perspective on what would be good to have in a bike. 'Cause bikes in Boston take a beating.
Yeah. That's actually kind of a that's almost a benefit for you, right? Because you get to kind of see what it is people are bringing in and what they do with their bikes before you choose like what you're going to offer. Because I mean, some shops are full service; they offer like every range of bicycle, like any kind that you could possibly want. But I suppose there's an advantage to knowing first of all who your customer base is and what they look for, and then being able to offer them the best bike that fits those particular needs.
Totally. Yeah. And it's not, I mean, that's not for everybody. Some people like to go into a shop and see all of the newest things and have, you know, a choice between 15 or 30 or more different options. And some people just want someone to say, this is what you need. Like you ride every day, you ride this many miles, you know, you just need this. You should have a bike that will last this long and, you know, you should expect to tune it up, whatever, once in a year. And
this is the amount of beating you expect it to
take. Yeah, exactly. And we've got a pretty good perspective on how much of a beating bikes take.
I'm wondering, is there a frame that's come through that like somebody brought into you, or a bike that somebody brought into you that you were like, oh my God, I can't believe you're still riding on this thing.
Yes, all the time, every day. Yeah. Yeah, I use we use blow torches and hammers, and we just work on things that I would never imagine would still work, and somehow people get them to limp through, winters. And it's bikes are incredible machines, and they will put up with a lot, but you know, at some point, you gotta bring it into the shop.
Right.
So.
Do you offer welding services at your location?
Or no.
It's like everything up to, but not including.
Yeah, everything up to. I mean, I know a few folks that I can, if it's a really extreme situation, can, you know, hopefully call in a favor. But
yeah. It's good to know people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like my friend Drew, the welder, who's we list him as a show sponsor because he brought my bike back from the dead.
Oh, yeah.
When we thought it was dead. So
nice.
And that's going on like 2 years ago almost.
On that weld?
Yeah.
Oh, that's badass. Yeah,
just a big big sheet of brass that was welded onto my chainstay when the chainstay snapped. So
that's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. So I've gotten almost 2 more years out of that bike that I didn't expect to get. So thanks to Drew. But good to know people. Yeah.
Yeah.
I remember you were talking about offering bike storage, I think, at one point. Is that something you guys are still doing?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, because this is something that in Portland, I don't know of any bike shop that offers that service, because most people either have room in their house or they would ride it year-round or whatever.
Yeah, but
sure, yeah. Or leave it locked up outside all winter. I mean, those exist in Boston, too.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah, definitely. We had plenty of bikes that were unearthed from snowbanks in the spring, that kind of thing.
And we were talking earlier about the idea that in cities with snow, you actually have to put that snow somewhere when you shovel it. So,
yeah,
like,
snow farm.
Yeah, just buried underneath a large pile of debris and ice.
Super gross.
But that pile might include bicycles.
Yes.
But definitely. It doesn't have to, because you can put your bike in the Hub Bicycle Company basement.
You can, yeah. Yep, totally. Yeah. Last year we got a little, people were surprised. I think that, you know, if you get like a 2 or 3 inch snowfall, it will remind you that you need to bring your bike inside. last year we didn't get that. Our first snowfall, I think, was more than 2 feet or around 2 feet. So a lot of people got caught out.
Do a lot of people leave their bikes outside?
Yeah, like, I mean, apartments in the Boston area, in the greater Boston area, are ridiculously expensive and tiny. So, you know, a lot of folks don't have inside storage, so there's just not a lot of room for it. Yeah. My favorite, on my commute home, I ride down Windsor Street in Cambridge, and I noticed in probably June or July, a really nondescript, like, nothing bike, probably like a 60s Raleigh coaster brake bike, something you'd never notice, was locked to a signpost. But the way that the U-lock was holding it, it had been locked up on top of a snowbank.
Oh.
And when the snowbank melted, it just stayed at that height.
Just kinda hanging
so it was
there.
Like 5 feet off the ground still in June. It was really awesome.
That's
so
hilarious.
Yeah, it was great.
See, these are things. I mean, we had
the
a whole conversation.
The owner of that bike is like
they don't.
They're
I mean,
looking
they're
at how do I do? What am I supposed to do?
They forgot. Else? They forgot they even own that
Sorry
bike.
About that.
You've got mail.
and unplugging that was a bad decision. There.
That's all good. No, this is the sort of thing that like again, this is a thing that doesn't really happen in Portland, Oregon, that I know of, because we don't usually get that much snow. But yeah, snow comes and snow goes. So
it does.
It's fascinating.
Yeah.
I was curious, just a thing I noticed as I was walking around town, like bike theft is a big problem in Portland, and I assume in any major city, but the ways that bicycles were locked in Boston and the surrounding towns and things, it seemed as though people were locking them differently than I would lock them here. And I'm curious what your take is on the Boston theft scene and Cambridge and all the other surrounding towns.
Yeah, it's huge. I talk to probably 2 or 3 people a week with really sad stories about bikes being stolen.
Okay.
I had a bike stolen, and it was because I didn't lock it up. I leaned it up against the back door of the shop and forgot all about it. Generally the stories that we hear. It's something along those lines. Like, it's less about crafty thieves and more about neglect.
Okay.
So, you know, it's like...
So it's more of a crime of opportunity.
Yeah, totally. Coil locks are not a thing. I don't...
Like
we don't
cables
sell them.
And, yeah.
We don't sell cable locks in the shop because that's a great way to get your bike stolen.
True. Okay, so that was the thing I noticed, is that I saw a bunch of cable locks on bikes that seemed like they'd been there for a while.
Yeah.
So my assumption that it's safe to lock a bike with a cable in Boston, not the case.
Nope. No. People request it. You know, they come in and they say, like, I don't know, U-lock's a little expensive. Like, I'd like to get something a little cheaper or lighter. And we just don't sell them because I don't think it's responsible. I mean, I think you could spend $30 on a cable lock and get your bike stolen.
Right.
And that's, I don't want to be a part of that. So
it's like if you sold snacks, you could sell stuff with MSG or not.
We could, but we don't.
And you don't. Yeah.
We don't. No MSG in that bicycle company.
The last bike lock I purchased, I believe, was from your shop.
Oh, nice.
Because I had come over and I think I borrowed your Swobo.
Yeah, totally.
It was a nice ride. And I didn't have a lock. I hadn't brought one with me. So I was like, well, I'll buy a lock. And now it's, I think Adele is using it now. I'm not sure.
It's a U-lock.
I forget. Yeah, it's a U-lock. Yeah. But yes, U-locks are the way to go.
Definitely.
So, yeah. Definitely. Just to recap, because I like the place so much, the bike shop that you run has a wonderful layout. It's like really open. And because you've been to that shop, Aaron, right? Like, you walk in.
I've not been to Boston at all.
But like this hypothetical shop.
Oh, sorry.
Where you walk in and there's
like.
That
kind of shop.
And there are parts everywhere. And like. Even if it's not messy, it's just like floor space is at a premium.
Sure.
And you have a wonderfully open floor plan.
We do.
Yeah.
That's been a real personal struggle for me. I'm not an organized person. I have a lot of help. I have a lot of people that are much better than that, better at that than me. It's helped that we haven't sold bikes. Bikes take up a ton of space.
Oh, yeah. I didn't think about that. But
I
that
joke
is,
with people about that all the time. Like, you can stack toasters or TVs or whatever, but, like, you know, bikes are a lot of negative space. So it's organizing them is difficult.
Yeah.
I have worked in a number of those shops. I started working in shops when I was 15, and I worked in that shop, just like a tiny house on a main street in a tiny town in Maine that was just converted to a bike shop and was just packed full of shit.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it always felt a little claustrophobic. And I love that place. I mean, it's not, you know, I think that there's something really endearing about those kinds of
shops.
There
can be a certain amount of charm.
Yeah, totally. It also feels like an archaeological dig. Like, man, I wonder if I can find like a height right in here. Like, what kind of weird 90s bike tech you can, you know, dig up in the basement or whatever.
But, and the amount of possibility. Just like, if I need something, it's probably here.
Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to see what it would be like to have something that was a little more open than that. And it lets us do cool things like have people come by and... We had yoga this past winter. We did yoga on Tuesday nights because we had the room to. I mean, we have a beautiful bamboo floor in the shop right now. And so it's like, why wouldn't we do that? We have space. And
totally.
Paying rent anyway. Like, might as well use it. So,
hey, while you're in Portland, are you planning on going to VeloCult?
Definitely.
Nice. Yeah. It's a good spot. That's one of those places that they've actually worked on kind of keeping that floor space open because it's had various.
I mean, even though they carry bikes, they sort of make those very, I don't know, space friendly. They put them like all on the back or the sidewall, and then they've even got like some sort of structure to put them up above everything.
Yeah, as well as the just the collection, like Sky's personal collection of bikes that's hanging from the ceiling.
Well, yeah, there's that, yeah.
Upside down. So you look up, and it's a big constellation of bikes. But yeah, it helps to have, I guess, an old antique mall, too. That's part of it. But yeah, I'm curious. So tell us more about getting into wrenching and being a bike mechanic and...
Oh, man.
What drew you to it?
So this is my elevator pitch on how I became a bike mechanic, because I get asked all the time.
Uh-huh.
So when I was 15 years old, I lived in a tiny town in Maine in a tourist area. So there was a little shop in town, and I asked for a job, and the boss said, we don't really need anybody. But a woman who worked there, who was like the second in command at that point, knew my family. And so at one point I was riding my bike home from school and I waved. This woman's name is Noreen.
Mm-hmm.
I waved to her on my way home. And before I got home, she had called my parents to see if it was okay that she offer me a job like sweeping floors and,
what?
You know, at a fixing
nice.
Flash.
Oh, okay.
You know, so that it was like, I think that that's, I owe it all to Noreen Hogan, who got me my first job, you know, summer job. Just working in a bike shop.
Yeah.
And it was super fun. I mean, I learned a ton. I worked with like an old guy who was a retired Coast Guard. I don't know if he was a boat captain or something. I don't know. Whatever.
Was he Grizzly?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But in the best.
He can be a boat captain for the purpose of
yes,
the story.
Yes. Yeah. He was a boat captain. For sure.
He's all grizzly.
Totally grizzled. And he would be working on a bike and he'd stop and say, Emily, come here. I need to show you something. And, you know, he'd tell me something that was totally over my head. And at that point, you know, I was like 15. I was like, I don't know. Like, I just want to buy a mountain bike.
Like, this is why you run the
cables
this way.
I don't care about this stupid 3-speed.
Right.
Mountain bikes are so hot right now.
They kind of were, weren't they?
Yeah, they like totally were. Totally.
Yeah.
Oh, man. So yeah, I did that when I was in high school and then, it was great. I think I worked there 3 or 4 summers. And then I went to college like people do.
Like you do. Yeah.
Like you do. And
get yourself an education.
Yeah. You know, I went to college and I even did a year of grad school. And then after a year of grad school, I realized I was really missing out because I didn't have any professional experience. It's like, you know what? I'm going to go out into the workforce and like get a job. At that point I was in a program for counseling and I ended up in a, working for an agency that had an emergency shelter for at-risk youth,
okay.
at-risk teenagers. And it stressed me out. I gave myself an ulcer.
Oh.
I really respect folks who do that work because I just can't imagine how you do that.
But you're like, I care, but I can't do this.
Yeah, but I can't. Like, oh, man, I got to go home and not think about you guys for a while.
Yeah.
So I knew at that point, I knew that that working in a bike shop was fun. It's like I remember when I was a kid, working in a bike shop was fun. So what I'm going to do is quit this job I can't handle and work in a bike shop for the summer. And I'll get my shit together and figure out what I want to be when I grow up, and I'll go from there. And that was in 2005.
Okay.
And I've just been working in the bike industry ever since.
You found something you liked, and it seemed like
great.
A good thing to keep on going.
Yeah.
So how long have you had Hub Bicycle Company?
It will be 6 years February 1st.
Congratulations.
We opened the door 6 years ago.
Yeah. And you were saying you came up with the idea when you were in Portland, right?
Yeah. Yep. I learned a lot. I mean, I grew up in New England and Maine and worked in shops there. It's ridiculously difficult to get a full-time job as a mechanic in Maine because half of the year there's snow on the ground and I'm not a skier. So, you know, for the shops that are like bike and board or bike and ski.
Yeah. Are there a lot like that?
Yeah. I think there are less now. I don't know.
Sure.
I mean, I think, you know, there's some of each type of shop.
Yeah.
And especially as cycling, and there's still a lot of there are getting to be more opportunities for year-round cycling, so
the fatter the tires get,
totally,
the more you can do.
you don't ever have to stop now, so
yeah. And did you work for a shop here in Portland, Oregon then?
I did, yeah. I worked for oh my gosh, Velo Shop, Molly Cameron's. Velo Shop,
yeah
back in the day.
Yeah. That's now it's Portland Bicycle Studio.
Yeah.
Right.
Yep.
And actually, Molly made the news because there was a problem with the whole, like,
that.
You know, can Molly race in the division that Molly's in? And
yeah.
There were some issues. And I heard that there was going to be some revision on some of their policies and things.
I hope so.
But yeah.
I think I saw that she actually did pretty well in whatever the last race was that mm-hmm. she at Nationals. So
yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. But anytime someone transitions gender, there's always those things of like, you know, is this, will this be allowed? How will people feel about it?
And yeah.
The short answer to that should be like, fuck that. Let them do what they want to do. But
totally.
But not everybody sees it that way. So, yeah. I just remember reading the news on that. And yeah.
Yep.
But, okay, so you worked for it was Velo Shop.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah, I learned a ton. I mean, it was great. So when I moved to Oregon, I lived in Eugene for a little bit and worked there for, I think, a couple of years. And then mm-hmm. I moved to Portland. And
yeah.
Yeah.
Nice. And then the shop was born.
And then the shop was born.
You've been in Cambridge since.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what pulled you back to Cambridge?
I am a native New Englander.
Yeah. It's in your blood.
I can't help it. Yeah. Yeah. At one point when I lived here on the West Coast, I told someone I would never move back to New England.
Oh.
And they made sure to rub that in my face.
Yeah,
yeah, totally. When I moved back. But, you know, sometimes it takes that perspective, you know, like a 3,000 mile away perspective to see
sure.
what you really love about it. Plus, you know, my family's great and they're you know, adorable weirdos. So I can't be away from them for too long. So
that is tricky. Yeah. Anytime you're far away from people you care about, it's like, well, how could I shorten that?
Yeah, totally.
The one way is to go home and open a bicycle shop. So
you could do that. Yeah. I mean, I don't, you know, opening a bicycle shop is not a good way to do anything with, it takes time. It's not really good if you want to like see your family or ride bikes or whatever, but it's great.
It's not that easy.
No,
you can't just like plop down.
It's
somewhere
awesome.
And be like, okay, I'm opening a shop.
Yeah,
now.
It's awesome if you hate money and like working hard.
Ka-ching.
It's perfect. Yeah.
Check and check.
Yeah. So and it turns out I don't.
You
I'm
just
learning,
sold
what
this whole
money
idea
for?
To yeah. me here. Long hours, low pay.
Yeah.
That's
yes.
a lateral movement to me.
I'm in. Yeah. So you've been. We should probably say before we go any farther that this episode, as every episode of the Sprocket Podcast, is in fact brought
yes.
to you by the Beer Mongers at Southeast Division and 12th. So,
which I've just noticed they're carrying the blueberry
Lionheart
kombucha
yeah.
this time around as opposed to the raspberry.
Oh, blueberry.
Yeah.
Blueberry ginger.
Yeah.
How is that?
It's all right.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah.
I'd offer you a swap of taste, but it's not.
No.
This
it's nowhere near
thing.
As tart as the raspberry.
Nice. Well, yes. That's good. It sounds like a good thing to to have around.
Yeah.
Yeah. What are
very
you enjoying over there?
Oh, man. What is this? An Ace IPA.
Out of Tacoma.
Out of Tacoma.
Wingman Brewers.
It's
yeah.
great.
Yeah. Yeah. They have, I think, if I'm not mistaken, we were talking about Aeronaut Brewing in, also in Somerville, Massachusetts.
Yep.
They have a can run, which I forgot to pick up. It was a black IPA, I think, and I really wanted
to
try it.
It's in the can.
Yeah. But they had the same labeling system as Wingman, where it's like it's really small run canning, and so it's like just a silver can with like a label around it.
Yeah.
Which I like. So, yeah. And I'm enjoying, of course, the Hopworks Survival Stout, which is the very first beer available in Portland that was made with coffee. So, yeah. Yeah. So, anyways, thank you, the Beer Mongers. What was your take on the Beer Mongers while you were there, Emily?
Oh, man, it's great.
Yeah.
Overwhelming and awesome. And
yeah. You know, the regular crowd that hangs out there, they're so enthusiastic, especially
yeah.
if there's sports involved.
Well, I was going to say it's a Saturday, for one.
Yeah.
Which is kind of an off day for us to be recording. And it's in the evening or later in the evening than when we normally come in.
That's true.
It was a totally different crowd to me.
Yeah.
Anyways.
That's true. Yeah. It serves all kinds. No matter what kind of a person you are,
yes.
you're welcome at the Beer Mongers. In fact, they're saving a seat for you. So, yeah. Everybody go over there. That's what I would like to say. But, yeah. So, you, Emily, you're on a trip right now. You started in San Diego. You've been working your way north.
Yeah.
Tell us about where you've been.
Oh, man. Okay. So, I spent some time in San Diego, and that was great. And then I hopped on the train, Amtrak. Having a bike on Amtrak is mostly easy, so that was great.
Mostly.
Mostly.
Was that the Surfliner?
I did take the Surfliner.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I say mostly
that has
easy.
The roll-on service.
Yes. Except that between San Diego and L.A. and Santa Barbara, where I stopped taking the Surfliner, I didn't realize that the bike car would be on the opposite end of the train.
Oh, so you got to book it if you're not.
Yeah, snap. And they were like real cranky with me that I wasn't
on the ball.
That I didn't know what was going on. Also, the whoever was on the PA who was yelling at me kept calling me sir. Which, you know, like that's
come on,
sir with the bicycle. It's like, well, I'm not
obviously.
Sir, so
obviously.
You are talking not to somebody else. I'm going to take my time.
Yeah, yes.
Ladies don't bike.
Yeah.
That's rough. Did you hear about the thing with it was Ellie Blue and Joe Beal and their fiasco with the Amtrak in Texas, I want to say? They had the short version is, I won't go into the whole thing because we've talked about it a lot. Sounds right. But they had folding bikes, Bromptons, they had them stowed in the luggage racks. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, they may have been taking the sleeper car.
They were woken up anyways.
Yeah. But someone took issue with the fact that their folding bicycles, which are allowed on the train, I believe, were there. And someone else had luggage that had to go in. They're like, what are these damn bicycles doing here? And so it was like in the middle of the night and they got disturbed. And it was resolved peacefully, both through Twitter and as many things can be.
Yep.
And through some communication with Amtrak's higher ups that
right, well, it took a phone call, I thought, to like their offices or corporation or whatever.
Right. And I want to say that they were in danger of having their bikes put off the train or something like that. So it was there's not always some understanding, but you know, things are getting better. We only have one, you know, intercity train service. That's not like a local regional public transit service or whatever in the United States. It's a government subsidized corporation, I believe. It's but there's only one. So it goes. It's getting better.
Yes.
Like in this situation that you had, you still had to run and be scolded and everything and be called sir.
And be called sir. Yeah. And then one of the conductors was like, why aren't you riding the bike? And it was like, just, I had it like fully loaded up. And so it wasn't. It's like, I'm not going to ride it down the platform. Like, it's going to take me longer to get my leg over this than just walk it. Yeah. So, whatever.
And you would think that.
It only takes like one person to like unawaredly walk in front of you to like have to, halt everything. Then you stop and trying to get back started again.
And usually they would tell you not to ride on the platform, I would think.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a person who really appreciates like, you know, I'm a rule follower and I like to fly under the radar. And so like getting called out over the PA, oh man, not super so stress.
What did I
super
do?
Super stress. It's like, wait, I thought I was on the West Coast. Like, why are all these assholes being East Coasty with me? It's like, I'm not riding the T. I'm getting yelled at.
Yeah.
It's good. Yeah. It's fine.
Yeah, but you're
transplants.
You're an Amtrak supporter, though, right?
You're
into the idea that you can go places on the rails.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, it's a perfect fit with a bike. Like, why it makes your bike go farther.
Right.
I mean, that's really I would not have been able to ride my bike from San Diego to Portland
in the amount of
time that I have. This is great.
Right.
And in between, I've gotten a mountain bike and like go camping and do all kinds of other fun stuff. So, it's, and I wouldn't have been able to do that without Amtrak. So,
our friend Tim Mooney calls it a fast forward. Bush, by the way, if you haven't heard, we'll just keep on doing this, like, pat each other's back sort of thing.
Some more things.
The Pedal Shift Project. It's a fantastic podcast specifically about bicycle touring and travel.
And advice for such.
Yes, if you want to do that, you should go to the Pedal Shift Project first.
Every now and then he has some really interesting, I don't know, for lack of a better term, product reviews.
Yeah.
And I will listen to those more than other episodes.
More than once?
Maybe so.
Yeah. But yeah, no, he's a big fan of the fast forward idea that like if you can't ride the entire thing in the time that you have. Yeah. You know, this is one way that you can do it, and you don't have to own a car, you don't have to use a car to do it if you don't want to, especially if you're going point to point. You're not starting where you're ending and everything. It's a great way to kind of get yourself moved around. So Santa Barbara, you did some bicycling there?
I did. Yeah, I went
mountain
into
bicycling.
Oh, man.
Which I hear they call trail riding now.
Trail riding, mountain biking.
Yeah.
So in New England, so the reason I love all bicycles, I love 95% of bicycles.
Do you like Magnas? Yeah.
If they're getting the job done for somebody, then I can't blame them for.
You like what a magnet can do for someone.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. But the reason that I am in the profession that I'm in, and the reason that I own the shop that I do, is because I love mountain biking.
Yeah.
It's my favorite thing in the world. And I grew up in Maine, and I learned to mountain bike in New England, which is very different than the mountain biking in any other part of the country.
A lot of granite?
A lot of technical things.
Okay.
A lot of rocks and roots and rock walls, old rock walls, which is I think super fun.
Yeah.
It's also, you know, the riding in New England are green spaces. There are tons and tons of them, but they're not expansive or epic. There are very few rides that you can do in New England that would be called epic. I mean, we have some, but not, you know, especially not around the Boston area.
Mm-hmm.
It's some of the most fun riding I've done, but it wouldn't be described as like an all day epic.
Okay.
Trail ride.
You do it twice.
Session. Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I forgot that here on the West Coast, there's a lot of like death marches up a fire road forever.
Yeah.
And then a super fun single track trail down.
In pursuit of that single track.
But
yeah.
Man, oh man.
Mm-hmm.
So
like
if
you're not getting
up,
shuttled up, then you have to go the whole way.
Boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
There was a guy with his son in one of the parking lots that I ended up in the Los Padres National Forest near Santa Barbara. The guy was like, oh, this is great. You know, if you're new to the area, I was asking what, you know, I was only in town for a couple of days. Like, what should I ride?
Yeah.
I'm new here. He's like, oh, this is great. You know, you take this fire road. It'd be like a 45-minute climb. And then like the super fun swoopy downhill. It's like, oh man, 45-minute climb. Like, you don't. Thank you. That is generous of you to think that I'm that fit. But like, oh boy.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a long. It's. I really. It's fun. It's challenging. It's very different than what I'm used to. So that's been great. But yeah, it's like, you know, closer to an hour and a half or maybe longer. Take a lot of breaks. Like, oh God, I think I'm going to die.
Right. Well, that is kind of interesting though. The idea that like you're not, it's not like you're getting lifted somewhere. You're just kind of, you're accomplishing the whole thing. You're bagging the whole thing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. And on the flip side, when dudes tell me, cause it's always dudes who are
always dudes
who are
giving terrible
trail recommendations. when they tell me to be careful because like a certain section of trail is technical, it's like, oh my God, that's adorable.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, technical. Like, okay. So yeah, it's been fun. And
Do you have a list of things that male bicyclers should not say to female bicyclers?
Oh man, I can't even. It's like a.
Do we need to narrow that down further? Maybe.
You know, it's interesting. If you had asked me that like 3 years ago or 4 years ago, I think I would have had a lot more to say.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think the longer I go into owning a bike shop, the fewer kind of ridiculous gender things come up for me.
Hmm. That's good, right?
Yeah, which is good. I don't know if that's because I ignore them more or what.
I was going to say, have you just gotten desensitized to them?
Yeah, I'm just desensitized to them. Like, I think 4 weeks, like a month before we shut down for winter sabbatical, a guy came into the shop who is he's a regular. He doesn't bring his bike in for tune-ups very often, but we're like his triage spot. So we do a lot of like flat tires and broken chains and things for him. So I think he's probably been coming to the shop since I started it. I mean, he's been coming to the shop for years, and one of the other guys in the shop was helping him, and I was working on a bike, and so the kid, you know, went downstairs to find something for him, and he just started chit chat with me while I was doing a tune up, and he's like, oh hey, so where's your husband? It's like, I don't have a husband, and he's like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry,
I'm so sorry.
I mean, the guy who's always here, your boss. It's like, I'm the boss.
Strike one, strike two.
Yeah, it's like, I don't have a boss. It's just me. He's like, oh, I,
Well then.
Like started to back away slowly.
So he didn't strike out then?
No, he's like, oh boy, like super foot in mouth.
Right.
And then waited. And then thankfully, you know, the kid who was helping him out happened to come back up the basement stairs at that point. I was like, oh, thank God. But yeah, that was
having,
like the first, that was the first, you know, kind of like awkward, awkward interaction where someone realized that, you know, it was a woman owned shop or whatever.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. It's still kind of out of the norm, right? Yeah, like whether it should be or not, but like it's, that's, we don't get as much of that.
Yeah. Not as much as there should be. I don't think.
Yeah. We had planned to have Leah Benson from Gladys
Bikes
come in.
This is where I'm missing
Leah
Benson.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So next time you're in Portland, we'll get you and she together to talk about, because I'm sure she probably deals with a very similar thing often.
Oh, man.
But yeah. Well, okay. Yeah. So there's that. I remember, I want to say, was it Rivendell had the list of things that you're supposed to do? And one of them was like, if you're a dude, don't try to mentor every female cyclist you meet.
Oh, boy. Yeah.
Which would that be more like if you meet out in the field somewhere?
I am very tired of talking to the boyfriend about the girlfriend's bike while she's standing there. I feel like I've gotten around. Like if you just don't make eye contact with that dude and you talk to the woman. It can
as her boyfriend talks to you.
Yeah, it can be a real chore, but we do still get a handful of that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But
that's one of the things that like I regret.
Just jingle your keys.
Yeah.
Like, here, here's a toy. Go.
Look at the shiny thing over there.
Yeah.
I regret that like it is still so hard kind of for that sort of bias in particular to go away.
Yeah.
And I guess that's because that bias in American culture still really hasn't gone away. But I feel like you're saying, it's like a lot of it is just kind of like speaking directly to the person that you're concerned about and like trying to draw both. And if you have a background in counseling, you understand some of the human dynamics that go into this, and you're well set up to kind of target the person who's not speaking, who should be speaking, and kind of raise everyone to the same level, as it were.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Eventually it'll be.
Yeah.
Everything's going to be great.
Yeah.
Everything will be okay.
We were talking about Santa Barbara.
Yes.
And mountain biking.
Oh, yeah.
Do you have a recommendation for anyone else who might either be there or go there someday?
Oh, man.
Anything super technical?
Nope. Nope. I rolled the whole thing on a rigid, fully rigid bike, and it was great and fun.
The technical aspects were nowhere to be found?
No, there were. There definitely were. I'm probably going to get in trouble for saying that.
But your experience.
Yes. If I, as a person who's the engine of my bicycle is weak, and my bicycle was not as technologically advanced as everybody else on the trail, and I still had fun, like I think you could just go ride there and it would be great.
You would think so,
yeah.
And now we're full circle with sexism and things.
Yeah.
So what happened after Santa Barbara?
What did happen after Santa
Barbara? You said you were hoping to do train all the way up.
Oh,
I was hoping to do train. But sometimes it's not feasible if you're trying to go certain places the train does not.
Yeah, I spent two really cold nights of camping in a row, and I just realized that I was not – I'm taking a break right now.
Sure.
I want to be alive to go back to working at the shop when I get back there.
And before we started recording, we met up. We were talking about like taking a vacation kind of entails taking some time and making yourself as comfortable as you can be so that when you go back to work, you're not like harried
recharged
from your vacation.
Or not dead.
Right. Where did you camp?
I spent one night camping at a beach state park, which was actually really nice, and then two nights camping in the mountains,
nice.
Which was also fun, but, you know, super cold.
Yeah,
so.
Coastal mountains?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yep.
I'm partial to, like, all those places down there. Just fresh off of a trip from the San Francisco area and having a rental car, it was lovely to bounce around and kind of see some of the uninhabited areas. And so beautiful out there.
Yep.
So you picked up a rental, right?
So I picked up a rental. I ended up driving to the Redwoods area
with
a rental, which was a long drive. When I was a kid, that was like our family vacations were always road trips. So, as much as I feel like as guilty as I feel for really loving a car road trip, I feel like I shouldn't like them as much as I do. But yeah, man, it was great.
Do you think so? Like, because I always think I feel like people should feel guilty for like a daily commuter. It seems like there's no reason in an established American city, in most of them anyways, like there's no reason you should have to drive to work every day.
Yeah.
But like for your vacation, especially if you're going somewhere and there's no other place to get there, like in a reasonable amount of time, the rental car is a great way to go.
It really is.
One of the things I was telling Adele about on our trip here is that like, I like to take a photo of every rental car that I get, like in one of the cool places that we go. And then I can show people when they say, oh, you don't own a car. That must be really tough. And I can show them like the fleet of cars that I've rented, like specifically for the purpose. Like I got a Prius for this and I got a 4Runner for that. And I got this little like Honda Civic for that. And just like being able to say, hey, I used all of these vehicles. And you know why I was able to get such a wide variety? Because I didn't have to pay for my own. I didn't have to maintain it, didn't have to have insurance, all that. Like, I feel like it's, as long as it's not like a, you know, like, if you need a car to get to work every day, it seems like something is wrong with your lifestyle. I'm probably going to offend a lot of people that are listening to this right now. Exactly. Losing all those sponsorships.
I think with the caveat of, like, if you're in an urban area, if you're, like you said, in an established city.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I mean, for as much as we like to complain about TriMet, it's a pretty decent system.
Yeah.
And yeah, it enables, I think the snow around here sort of underlined like how great it is, what a great service it is. Because those roads were pretty dangerous for any single car.
Here in Portland with the ice that we just
drive,
had. Yeah.
I don't care if you've got front wheel drive. I don't care if you've got like posit traction or whatever.
Posit traction. That sounds fun.
It's not a word I made up. I promise.
But yeah, it's good to have like a transit system to get you where you need to go.
But yeah, I mean, they're skilled drivers. They have chains on the tires. Those tires or those the drivetrains are made to work under any condition.
Right.
You know, versus your spinny tires that are that, you know, you're sliding out at every intersection with your with your whatever car.
And if you're lucky, Dan Christensen will be your bus driver.
Yeah.
You know, I think so. Inside baseball. Ooh. Dan Christensen, TriMet bus driver here in Portland. There have been times when I've gotten onto the bus and I've wondered if it's him.
Oh, yeah.
Because like, you know, when you get on the bus, you don't expect to see someone you know.
I half wonder if like I've already taken a bus ride with him.
Yeah.
And, you know, we've just missed each other.
I was messaging him around the New Year saying, hey, Happy New Year and everything. We were talking about something. And I was like, hey, so just so you don't take it personally, if I saw you and I didn't say hi and how you doing, Dan, it's because I wasn't sure if it was you and I didn't want to be that guy who's like, are you that guy? So, yeah. Anyways, all that to say, he's a good guy and a good bus driver.
Yes.
And a good blogger.
Yes.
But, yeah. So rental car, what did you enjoy about your trip and this indulgence that you weren't sure you should enjoy?
Oh, yeah, totally. So I ended up, my original plan was to take Amtrak to somewhere Northern California and then ride my bike over to the Redwoods.
No luggage stops, though, right?
Like
that's part of the problem is that you have to like box your bike for that segment of the trip.
Yes.
And there's no good place to get off
between
San Francisco and Klamath Falls.
Nope. And I don't do a lot of planning on trips, so I didn't realize that until I was already in Santa Barbara. This is why normal people make plans and like research things, which I didn't do. So I got a rental car and ended up going to the Redwoods, which I hadn't been to since I was a kid, since like my, you know, family days of taking epic cross-country, you know, road trips.
Yeah. Which Redwoods did you go to?
Because
there's a couple different protected parts of them, but
yes, the I'm gonna mess this up. Something with elk and prairie.
Oh yeah, elk prairie.
Yes. There we go.
Okay, so
there
just
we
being
go.
The smartest that I am was going to say that.
No, but I think I've been there, and it's a nice place. Yeah,
it was great.
National Park Service campground.
State. It's like a little state park.
Okay.
It's like a little state park surrounded.
Yeah.
It's like a little state park hot dog surrounded by the croissant. of the national parks.
That's the most tasty kind of
blank. It is, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it was great. I mean, it's not, it's going to sound super cliche and, you know, whatever. But, like, those are, you take a seed and dirt and water and sunlight, and then you get these, you know, skyscrapers. It's really...
They're fucking enormous. They're like...
Awe-inspiring, yeah. And like, yeah, makes you feel like everything's like you're nobody and yeah, part of the universe and everything's going to be okay and it's fine.
And then you can hug the tree, yeah, and totally, like kind of collapse in tears below it. Yeah. That's what I did anyways.
Yep.
But yeah, it's a nice spot.
All of those things.
And if you're lucky, you get to see elk.
I did. Yeah. It was nuts. They were like in somebody's yard. It's like, why is this person playing? Holy shit.
You like think they're just like plastic decorations
or
something?
Yeah, totally.
This is gaudy as fuck. Oh, it's a real
thing. Oh, no, they're animals. Yeah, that's fine. Yeah.
Another crossover, the Pedal Shift podcast, or Pedal Shift project. Tim was just talking to his friend, Mysterious James, about some of their trips, and they mentioned Elk Prairie, which is why it's so fresh in my mind. Okay. So, yeah.
Nice.
But that's a great spot.
Yeah.
Very cool. Did you find mountain biking there as well?
Yeah, there's a little, there's one, so national parks aren't great for, they don't really like mountain bikers.
What was the emphasis on preservation and all?
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, it's, mountain biking may or may not be, probably not be any more detrimental to the environment than hiking, but whatever.
Far less.
Probably not.
I would think.
But, yeah, so in the state park, they had a, they set up like a little, a 19-mile loop that, that was part road and then some single track and some double track. So
very cool.
It was really awesome. Yeah. Kind of like dumped me out onto this beach, you know, after like being in Redwoods, then ending up on this completely deserted beach. I mean, this is also a really great time of the year to be in these places because no one is there.
For
like,
sure.
Nobody. Yeah. It was, it took me like two or three campgrounds in before I realized that I don't have to ask them if there's like where I need to be. It's like, I just, you can just take whatever campsite you want. Like whichever one looks the most awesome, you just go there. And
if you're
yours.
Used to, if you're used to like KOAing or something, it's like, well, you
or
go
like
and you talk
camping,
to the lady. And,
in the, when it's, you know, in the high season, when it's busy. I mean, I grew up near the national park in Maine. And that's
Acadia?
Like, yep. And if you don't book your campsite, like in, you know, if you want a campsite for Labor Day, if you don't book it in March, you can't have one.
Right.
So it's it's a very different to just like roll in and just feel like, well, this one kind of sucks. Like I'll take, oh, this one's awesome. I'll take it. Like
totally.
So
this one has a great view of whatever you're there to see. Yeah.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
Nice.
I grabbed one at Elk Prairie that was near a little stream. It's like, oh, this is awesome. Like a, you know, it's a nice white noise machine. I mean, you great night's sleep.
Yeah.
It's totally awesome. So I'm unpacking all my stuff and I hear this like, I hear this splashing. I look over and there's a salmon in there.
just kind of
like
around.
Swimming upstream. It's like, oh my God. That they
and
really
now
do
I've
that.
Got breakfast.
Yeah. It's like, come on, little buddy, you can do it. I was having a tough time.
Yeah.
I want to help him out, but
buy a man a campsite, give him a place for a night.
Yeah.
Teach a man to make camp with a fit. No, it doesn't work. I'm sorry. No. I was trying really hard.
Keep trying.
Anyways, that sounds lovely.
Yeah,
that
it
sounds
great.
Really nice.
Yeah, totally.
What was the weather like while you were there? I mean, it was cold, but.
Yeah, cold.
Yeah.
But, you know, not too bad.
Not prohibitively cold.
No.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Well, that's good.
You know, if you work in the bike industry, you have to get used to
taking
vacation when the weather's shitty. So, you know, like 40 degrees and rainy is pretty awesome.
Right.
It's not snowing, so that's good.
Also, riding in the Redwoods, did you feel anything like it was the Return of the Jedi?
Oh, yeah.
Because that's like where they filmed it, I believe.
Totally. Yep. They actually touted that in the little like newspaper they gave me at the visitor center.
There we go.
It's like 30 years ago.
So it's like Star Wars on a bike.
Were you making the sounds as you're riding through?
I wasn't going that fast.
I totally would do that.
I think we should do that someday. Let's put that on our list of things to do.
That's our submission for Film by Bike.
Do we have? We need a list of things to do. For the podcast. Like things that we come up with while we're
podcasting.
Yeah. Let's put that on the list of things to do.
I'll get a
Make
Google
a list.
Doc started.
Yeah, okay.
I'm doing it right now.
Yeah, and so after that, Portland and Eugene.
So then after that, I dropped the rental car off full of like dirt and pine needles and like, you know, I ended up sleeping in the back of the car for a night because it was really cold.
Nice. Did you have like the fold down seats and everything?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. I've always wanted to do that. I've never done it.
Oh, man, it's great.
What's camping in a rental car is okay?
Yeah, it's totally fine.
Nice.
Yeah, when I both when I moved from New England to Oregon and when I moved back, I made jokes about my car being my summer home.
Nice.
You know, whatever. You just sleep in the car. It's
yeah.
fine. Yeah, so then I dropped the car off in Eugene and got to catch up with a couple of guys that I worked with at a shop there.
Nice. You said you had some work done at Paul's, right? Or
yeah,
was this...
I worked at Paul's for, a little over 2 years, I think.
Okay, yeah. Paul's Bicycle Way of Life, which they have a couple branches of in Eugene.
They do, yeah.
They built
they
me a fine wheel back in 2009.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah, it's a good shop.
Yeah.
But and Eugene is a cool town.
It really is.
And somewhat, I mean, I hesitate to say this in the public sphere because, like, someone's going to go out and buy things and redevelop it. But it seems like Eugene is, like, at least partially immune to, like, the whole redevelopment wave that Portland's been experiencing. It's like it seems to be kind of the same town in a lot of ways as it's always been.
It was a college town to begin with.
Right, right.
There are a lot. Yeah, there's some – it seemed shockingly similar to me to when I lived there. You know, there were definitely some apartment buildings and things like that. But and it was, you know, to hear my pals who still live there, you know, talk about the real estate market and, you know, the way things are going. You know, I think there's definitely a change, but living in the Boston area, it's like not. It's like when they talk about traffic.
I often wonder, like,
it's
East Coasters, especially larger cities like Boston or New York, and like if they hear people like us in Portland complain about like things like gentrification or the housing market, if you're like, oh, you guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's some of that. It's similar when you guys talk about traffic. Like, traffic. That's
like you don't know from traffic.
Traffic.
You don't even have subways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, every city, I think, is going through – every cool city is going through different changes. And so that's – I mean, I think that's part of it.
The answer is obviously to move to a not cool city.
Yeah, just move somewhere shitty. And
Tulsa, here we come.
Yeah.
I mean, apologies to anybody we have listening in Tulsa. I'm sure.
actually, that'd be a dream come true for someone I know.
True. But so you saw Eugene, and now you're in Portland. And where do you go from here?
The final destination will be Seattle. I have to fly home at some point, so I have to be up there by the time
my
plane leaves. So I'm gonna hang out here for a couple of days.
Nice. Yeah.
Great.
Yeah. What's it like being back in Portland, having been away for some time?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really great. Like, it's a fun – when I originally moved to the East Coast, I remember very distinctly having a conversation with somebody that went something along the lines of, like, you know what's crazy? If you're on a one-way street and you want to go the opposite direction, you just go over a block, and then that street goes the other way.
Weird.
And people looked at me like I was completely insane.
Where
or
the
like
fuck an, do they do things
or
like that?
Or like an idiot.
Doesn't make any fucking sense.
Yeah, it's like why would you have three streets that are all one way in the right direction?
But it kind of does.
But that happens in where I'm from and all of New England. So yeah, so being back in Portland is great. I mean, it's been six, almost 7 years since I lived here, and it's still feels very natural to and super fun to ride a bike around. You know?
Most navigable city
in
America. I wonder if there's that award somewhere.
There we go.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I'm glad to hear it.
What's the thing that you were looking most forward to upon returning?
Besides being on the Sprocket Podcast.
Definitely being on the Sprocket Podcast. Food places I need to hit up.
Oh, yeah? What are you looking at?
I think I have to go to Nicholas Restaurant.
Oh,
is that still
yeah.
Okay, good. Yeah.
Yeah. What is it? Grand or MLK?
I don't know.
Best Mediterranean stuff. Yeah, there's one on Grand. There's also one in Gresham, if the one on Grand is full.
That's right.
I'm not going to Gresham.
No, it's a long ways out. But I feel like they have one more location, and I can't think of where it is.
I want to say in North Portland?
Could be. I'm not sure. Anyways, yeah, great place to get. Their hummus is superb.
Yeah, it's nuts.
Yeah.
And then coffee. You know, I'm just going to drink a ton of coffee.
Yeah.
Probably not going to sleep the yeah. whole time I'm here. So
back when you lived here before, Stumptown was owned by a Portland holding, and now it's it was owned by someone in Brooklyn, and now it's owned by someone else, and I forget who. But
bummer.
Yeah, but
I shouldn't admit, but like I was not Stumptown wasn't really my jam.
Well, you know,
so it's fine. it's fine with me.
Stumptown is kind of like the hipster Starbucks now. Because it's funny because Starbucks is like the hipster whatever, like from earlier. But
does that mean we're going to get a bunch of tourists like taking their pictures in front of the original Stumptown?
Right, and tons of
like
buskers.
Seattle does.
Yeah, yeah. I don't know. It's a good question. But no, the nice thing is that just like microbreweries that get bought up by like bigger holdings and larger companies, like there's always a smaller. Upstart that kind of takes its place in that hierarchy. There's always somebody making something that's like more locally crafted and has more attention given to it and everything. So I think they'll do fine. Have you had Kova?
No.
Kova coffee is pretty good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm going to check it out.
Yeah. They had that crossover with Fort George Brewing in Astoria.
Oh, yeah.
Where they made the coffee IPA,
yes.
I think. It was an IPA with
an
coffee
IPA?
Made, I
Not
think.
A stout.
It was a super hoppy coffee beer.
That sounds
and
like.
Yeah.
That would be the only thing I would want to drink. Forever.
It was a limited release, and so I don't know that you can get it right now.
Oh,
but Kova makes very good coffee anyways.
Okay.
In addition to many others, there are lots of good places to find coffee in this town.
Cellar
as
Door.
You well know.
Yeah.
Cellar Door. Just 12th and Harrison.
Right.
Or 11th and Harrison.
Sorry. Named for the most beautiful phrase in the English language.
I don't know if that's I guess probably
some guy said cellar door was like the most beautiful like set of words or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know specifically if that's why they named that. It wouldn't surprise me though.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's my roaster of choice.
Yeah.
Nice.
And they're not far from here.
Nope.
Yeah. You mentioned staying in a tiny house.
Oh, yeah. I did stay in a
that
tiny
was in
house
Eugene.
In Eugene. Yeah. I'm not this is my first experience with Airbnb things.
Yeah.
It's not really, I don't get to go on vacation very often. So,
being a bicycle shop
yeah,
owner.
You know, whatever. Yeah. Like, vacations are not really part of the
right
part of the deal. So,
yeah.
And technically, this is a sabbatical. It's
okay.
Different. It's more
for tax reasons.
Productive.
Yeah.
No, it's, you know, for like, I don't know if you know this, but Boston is a very, there are a lot of institutions of higher learning.
Oh, sure.
And sabbatical.
Are you sure? I didn't think it was a college town.
Yeah. My favorite thing is with Harvard students when they come into the shop is to pretend like I've never heard of it. It's really great.
Where is this place you're talking about?
Oh, man. Harvard. Yeah. No, I think I've heard of that. It's like near, it's kind of near MIT, right?
Is there a subway station there?
Like, is it one of the colleges at MIT or what?
Right, but it's respected to take a sabbatical, right?
Yes,
whereas a vacation is like self-indulgent and unnecessary.
And, you know, I know for myself, this is an important I'm taking a break from the shop, but, you know, I'm still riding my bike and, like, getting things done and thinking about the shop for the future. And all the dudes that I work with are doing really awesome. They're all really interesting people, and they're taking the time to do the things that they feel passionately about outside of bikes. And so I feel really grateful to be able to have this time.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. That's a healthy thing to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally.
You recharge your batteries.
Exactly.
So you can drive that Prius as far as it'll go.
Drain them through the years and setting bikes on fire and pounding rusted parts out of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, very cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah. Thank you for coming in. It's good to have
Thanks
you here.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
This is great.
Happy Portlanding. What about
Thank
Seattle?
You.
Just last thing on this trip of yours. Are there any destinations?
You like coffee, right?
I do, yeah.
Yeah. What is it? Starbucks up there?
Yeah.
Oh, right. There's that one place. Yeah.
Man, I think I've heard of that. But yeah, totally.
It's really small. It's a little mom and pop place.
I couldn't help myself.
All right. So Hub Bicycle Company sponsors a team. We have a shop team. It's called Team Monster Truck.
Nice.
Because we started
run
out
over
because
cars?
We don't.
You run over
yeah,
cars.
Yeah, because we run over cars. And because I think it conveys a certain amount of not taking it too seriously.
Yeah.
But the co-founder of Team Monster Truck moved to Seattle like a year ago. So
okay.
I'm going to catch up with that too.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's my plan for Seattle
nice.
And ride bikes and hang
Very
out.
Very good.
So,
Seattle, I think, has a great like separated bikeway network.
Oh, nice.
There's a lot more paths. I think Seattle probably has more per capita than many places, aside from Minneapolis. Like, they've got a lot of places where you can ride and no worries about the traffic. So, yeah.
Nice.
I recommend it.
Sweet.
Yeah. All right. Well, so how can people find the Hub Bicycle Company on the internet?
Hubbicycle.com.
There we go.
That's it.
Fabulous. Excellent. And anything else people should know before we sign off?
No.
Okay.
Ride bikes.
It's a
have
good,
fun.
It's a good thing. Good thing to do. Yeah. Well, yeah. So as we mentioned before, shouts out to Tim Mooney, the Pedal Shift Project. Fantastic podcast. Also, welcome back to Pedal Hub because they're back after a six-month hiatus.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Oh, so wonderful.
I've been enjoying their new episodes, which is great. Yeah, and there are no other bicycle podcasts. In fact, there are no other podcasts anywhere that you need listen to.
Podcasting is canceled.
It's pretty much dead, except for bicycling. Yeah. Well, we have no news. We have no headlines because those will be done on Monday. So this is it for us.
This is it.
This is also it for Aaron Flores, who is leaving the country for 2 weeks.
I left my job, and now I'm leaving the country.
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
And you'll never find me ever again.
Uh-huh. So King of Division.
I'm abdicating.
Oh, really?
No.
Okay. No. Like the Dread Pirate Roberts.
I'll tell you real quickly. Eric Iverson called me out.
Of Grilled by Bike?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. They're doing a thing. Anyways, he called me out on Twitter because he saw me riding up Division and turn off just on 13th.
Ooh. But he wanted you to ride all of your territory.
Yeah. Which, yes. He's keeping me honest.
You know, technically.
But it was a Friday afternoon.
That's true, yeah. Even the King of Division needs a sabbatical.
Well, you know, you can be the King of Division, and you can also be a dead king.
Well.
So I would rather not have to get run over by angry rush hour drivers.
That's true. That makes sense to me. Yeah. Yep. And technically, Division Street goes, like, from where we are here, this is basically the terminus, like out by 7th Avenue.
True.
More or less. And it goes all the way out to Oxbow Park.
I guess I could have got back on Division. Well, I did at one point.
I think we need to take a King of Division ride all the way to Oxbow Park and spend the night there.
That would be badass.
Because that's also part of your kingdom.
We'll just start right, you
all
know,
the way down Division.
We'll start at the studio.
Yeah, and a whole a whole horde of people.
Here, hold on.
Yeah?
Yeah. King
of on the list. Perfect. Excellent. Because okay. Otherwise we just put this out and everyone else wonders, why aren't you going to do that thing you said? We're like, what are you talking about?
What?
Perfect.
Yeah. People ask me, how's your back? What?
I forgot all about it.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. All right. Well,
here
we go. This is it.
Oh, do we have a theme?
Oh, you know, so Emily, do you have a theme for us? Like, should we pretend to be certain characters or?
Oh, man.
Or have certain derivations of, yes.
Do you have like maybe, I always throw this out here and no one ever bites. Do you have maybe some sort of abstract theme that for us to interpret as we will?
I think it would be most appropriate for you to interpret being Bostonians. Is that a?
Oh my.
Would you
let
like
us
to
offend
take
some
a
more
crack
people.
At
all
that?
Right. I'm in.
I would
might
totally
as well.
Take a crack
I'm,
at that.
All right. All right. See all what right. we can do.
I got to turn myself down though. I already know.
With all the requisite swears.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Okay.
All right.
Okay.
Our website is thesprocketpodcast.com.
Email to thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com.
Call or text to 503-847-9774.
Twitter at thesprocketpodcast.
Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for our theme music.
Herbert for our headline sound.
Marcus Norman for graphic design.
And thanks to sustaining donors. I almost went into Arnold Schwarzenegger there. Sorry. Logan Smith, Johnny K, Shadowfoot.
Katrina Melamgard, Wayne Norman, Doug Robertson.
Ethan Georgie, Justin Martin, Eric Iverson.
Cameron Lean, Richard Wazensky, Tim Mooney.
Orange and Purple, Glenn Kubisch, Matt Kelly.
Jim Gooden, Eric Weiss, Doug Cohen Miller.
Todd Parker, Scott McAllister Morgan, Chris Gonzalez.
Dan Gebhardt, Zoe Campagna, Andy Brunner.
Dave Knows, Chris Smith, Christy Case,
Caleb Jenkins, and J.P. Cooley. Peter Butterjaw, Matt.
Patrick R. Chain, Gabriel Trainer, Sebastian Poole.
Marco Lowe, Rich Otterstrom, Andrew Otterson.
Drew the Welder, Anna, Chris Deskukas.
John Wasserman, Andre Johnson, Shelley and Troy.
the Wicked King of Division, Josh Zissin and Richard C.
All right, now brush your fucking teeth.
Get your ass to fucking bed. I'll whack you with a Louisville fucking slugger.
Were you just doing JFK?
I was trying my best. I was sucking bad.
Oh. Oh, God. Oh. That was a good time. Thank you for coming
nice.
In.
Yeah, that was great. That was fun.
Was it more or less intimidating than your basement? Basement was your turf, so.
Basement was my turf, but there's no dead body pile here. So
that's true. That is true. That you know.
And you already one
that's
beer
true.
In. So.
I know. That helps. Yeah, one beer is like 2/3 of a beer in. I was already A-OK, so it's good.